This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Ta-Nehisi Coates is one of the most celebrated thinkers of our time. He's a writer and MacArthur Genius Grant winner. And earlier this year, he was our guest. His book, Between the World and Me, is written as a letter to his teenage son about the realities of being a Black man in America. We'll revisit that conversation with Ta-Nehisi Coates tomorrow. And I wonder if there's something you wish your parents had told you when you were younger. Call us at 404-500-9457, and then be sure to join us Wednesday at 9 a.m. for more. Many prominent journalists got their start in Georgia, among them Judy Woodruff. She launched her career here at WAGA-TV, which is now Fox 5. Now she is, of course, the co-anchor and managing editor of the PBS NewsHour, and next month she will be inducted into the Atlanta Press Club Hall of Fame. Judy Woodruff joins me from Washington, D.C. Good morning.
Hello, Celeste.
Let's start in Atlanta, since you're about to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I wonder what kind of training you feel you got here in Atlanta, as opposed to having launched your career in New York or Los Angeles.
Well, the training was truly on the ground, because the first reporting assignment I was given when I was hired by the news director at WAGA, which was then a CBS affiliate, was to cover the Georgia State Legislature. So I headed over to the state capitol when I had been at WAGA all of, I think, 1 week. And this was after having been the newsroom secretary at WQXI, which was then the ABC affiliate. And I headed to the Capitol and started meeting members of the House and the Senate, and worked very closely with a cameraman, the late, great Leroy Powell, who was then with WAGA. And we worked our way through, and I stayed there for 5 years. And it was baptism by fire. I cannot imagine a better way to learn American politics than to learn it on the ground. Maybe City Hall, and I frankly did cover a little bit of Atlanta City Hall and City Council, but primarily it was the Georgia legislature, and these were folks from all over the state, obviously mostly Democrats back then, because we're talking 1970 through 1974, mostly Democrats, but there were some Republicans. But I can't imagine a better way to understand American politics than to start, you know, right there.
And you clearly excelled, because you got a job with NBC News just a few years later. And tell me a little bit about that transition from being with a local affiliate and then moving to a national network. What changed?
It was a big change. I had been given a lot of leeway in Atlanta covering the state legislature. I would come back from the Capitol, and we pretty much were given our due. I mean, we were told, you know, you come up with a story, you write it, you edit it, get it on the air. Once I was at NBC, I was reporting for the Today Show and NBC Nightly News, and everything was very tightly edited. Timing was right down to the millisecond. But I have to say, there was a wonderful editor at NBC, I'll never forget him, named Gil Milstein, who went over my copy with a fine-tooth comb. I thought I was a decent writer, but he reminded me that I was only, at that point, 6 or 7 years out of college, and that I had a lot to learn. And I have to say, I have to credit Gil with teaching me a lot about writing crisply and writing for television, making sure that what I wrote was matching the copy and that I was always grammatical and never made a mistake. I was taught that mistakes were death. But it was a transition. I obviously had learned a lot in Atlanta, but once I went to work for NBC, and by the way, I was still based in Atlanta for another 2 years, because I was at NBC's Southeastern Bureau there. Even though I was on the road, I was traveling constantly for NBC. My home base was Atlanta.
And you covered the presidential campaign of then-Governor Jimmy Carter. So you're one of the best placed people in the country to sort of look back at what has changed in presidential campaigns between then, 1976, and 2016.
You can only imagine. I mean, because then we were making the transition from film to video. We were just beginning video. There were these big, bulky cameras. We still had to file our stories from TV stations. We would have to go to a bureau, an NBC bureau, or an NBC affiliate TV station to file. We couldn't file from out in the field as today. You know, reporters can basically file from wherever they are. You set up a satellite, what they call flyaway system, and you're on the air. Not to mention, back then, I was filing for the morning news and the evening news. Today, reporters are filing all day long. I think, Celeste, what hasn't changed is the essentials of reporting. You know, make sure you've got your facts straight. Don't report anything unless you've got confirmation. Make sure it's balanced. The guts of journalism hasn't changed. What has changed are the technological demands, the fact that you're expected to report constantly now. You really don't have as much time as you once did to hone your copy and make sure it's very carefully written. Because today, there's so much of a premium today on reporting on the fly and on ad-libbing. You talk about the story rather than writing and crafting your piece. That's still done for the nightly news and for the Today Show, but look at where we are on cable. It's just a different world. And then you add to that social media. It's changed a lot. But I like to say, and I really do believe, the essentials of journalism have not changed.
My guest is Judy Woodruff. She's co-anchor and managing editor of the PBS NewsHour. She'll be inducted in the Atlanta Press Club Hall of Fame on November 29th. The thing is, though, Judy, that there's a lot of criticism that has changed in terms of fact-checking and confirmation. And we've had some really huge mistakes by major networks like CNN, in which they called a Supreme Court decision incorrectly, in which they have, not just CNN, but other networks, have actually identified people as suspects in major crimes, and it turns out those people were totally innocent. So people are constantly saying that we have lost some of the dedication and commitment that used to be involved in journalism in terms of getting two independent confirmations of facts and sources and things like that. Do you see that as having eroded?
Well, there's no question that the time, when you have to report constantly and when time becomes more important than anything else, when you're given literally seconds to turn around a report on a Supreme Court decision, you're asking for mistakes to be made. Reporters are not given the space and the time they need to check to make sure they've got it right. And I think sometimes we have leaned over too far in the direction of being first and put that ahead of being right. And I think that's when mistakes happen. I think, by and large, the media in general does a pretty amazing job of getting it right. It doesn't mean that the mistakes don't happen. They certainly do. But I think we're still at the point where there are few enough of them that, as you just said, we can point to what they were. It's not as if the media is reporting a steady stream of mistakes. I mean, having said that, one mistake is too many. We never want to make a mistake. You want to always get it right. But in my view, as we've in our pell-mell rush to be first always, and you've seen this particularly with cable and frankly with the internet and with online and social media, everybody wants to have the first tweet or the first online report or the first cable report. That's when mistakes happen. And so we have to be more careful than we've ever been before to check our sources, make sure it's right, check the facts, but at the same time recognize that sometimes mistakes are going to happen. We need to constantly remind our audience that when we're covering a breaking story, that we are in the middle of that story, that all the facts are not known yet. This is what we know at this point. And I think we have to do that. But you're absolutely right. There are mistakes. The Supreme Court call, that was a big one. And we can't afford to do that. Every time we do that, I think we erode our credibility.
You have a lot of experience moderating debates. Going back to 1988, when Democrat Lloyd Bentsen was running as Michael Dukakis's running mate and made that now famous statement to Dan Quayle, "You're no Jack Kennedy." But let's listen to something from a debate that you did not moderate. This is from 1984, when Geraldine Ferraro was running as vice president and faced off against Vice President George H.W. Bush, who was running for re-election with Ronald Reagan.
Let me help you with the difference, Ms. Ferraro, between Iran and the embassy in Lebanon. Iran, we were held by a foreign government. In Lebanon, you had a wanton terrorist action where the government opposed it.
Congresswoman Ferraro.
Let me just say, first of all, that I
almost resent, Vice President Bush, your patronizing attitude that you have to teach me about foreign policy.
So a couple of questions about what we just heard. I think probably in our current state of affairs, a candidate probably would have jumped in sooner without waiting for the moderator to give permission. And so do you think debates have become, in general, less civil?
Absolutely. But I would also say that the general election debates have been more respectful exchanges. There's certainly discourse, debate, disagreement, but in general, they're more respectful than the primary debates have been. Now, this year, 2016, I think
that's not,
you see
it's not a really high bar to meet, though, Judy.
well, you know, that's in the eye of the beholder. I would say 2016, all bets are off. We've never seen anything like the debates this year, where you had constant interruptions. We hadn't seen anything like what we're seeing this year before. And you know, you could say that has to do with who the candidates are and how fiercely, or who the nominees are and just how fiercely fought this election is.
So this hour, we're focusing on this huge debate, and there's a bunch of facets to it in terms of journalistic objectivity. And one of the things that's come up in the debates especially is people asking journalists to fact check in real time. That's something journalists have often not done in the past. They've just allowed candidates to make statements and let the audience decide. Where do you come down on this? Should journalists be fact checking people?
Do you mean the journalists who are moderating the
debate?
Or do you mean other journalists? Well, as someone who's moderated a debate before, I have to say, I think that's a very difficult territory to get into, because once you start doing that, then you are obligated to fact check on everything, and that, of course, is impossible. So I think, in my view, I think what the very least that moderators can do is to turn to the other candidate or the other nominee and say, you know, Secretary Clinton or Mr. Trump, you just heard, you know, Secretary Clinton or Donald Trump say X, Y, and Z. You know, how do you respond to that? Is that your understanding of that? I think unless something is just a flat out untruth, if somebody says, you know, the earth is flat or the sky is green, you know, that everybody knows to be wrong. Otherwise, you get, because then you if you correct one, then why aren't you correcting the other one? You know, why aren't you picking? It looks as if you're taking sides. And I think that's a very difficult area. I frankly think that the truth, or rather the fact checking, needs to come from the media and from voters and from the other candidates who are in the race. And by the way, I think voters have a responsibility here. I mean, what we have now is a media environment where, you know, everybody seems to have their own set of facts. And that's become a reality in the age of the internet and the age of opinion media, where one news organization reports one way and other news organizations report another way. Many voters listen only to one or watch only one side or another. We're in a pretty sticky wicket as far as I'm concerned, and I think we need to think about that as an American people together. How do we agree on a set of, or is there an agreed set of facts upon which we can make decisions? And if there's not, then we have real problems in governing this country. And I think it's something we need to talk more about in between elections.
Well, then last question for you. What is the discussion that comes after November 8th, and specifically among journalists? Because there has been so much criticism of journalists, some of it deserved, I think, some of it not deserved. Now we have Donald Trump accusing the media of possibly rigging the election. Some people said that we gave him too much free publicity with too much coverage. There has been all kinds of criticism of journalists and how they've approached their jobs during this election. What is the discussion among our profession on November 9th?
I think there's going to be plenty to talk about, not to mention the, you know, dealing with the results of the election, because at this point it looks as if whoever wins, there's going to be an extraordinary amount of either of anger, disappointment on the part of the Americans who voted the other way. Of course, the hope is that the country comes together after this election, that people accept the result, which Governor Pence, who is Donald Trump's running mate, says that he will. And last week, I interviewed Donald Trump's campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway. I asked her if Donald Trump were prepared to accept the results of the election, and she said, absolutely, we will accept the result. However, since then, Donald Trump has continued to talk about the election being rigged and talk about not just the news media, but election officials. And I think this is a troubling development in the election. And I think it's one that we, you know, in fact, on the NewsHour, it's one that we are looking at and talking about. But after the election, I think the news media, is going to have conversations about how we covered this election, what is our responsibility, where did we fulfill that responsibility, where did we fall down, because our credibility is so important. It's vital to the survival of our democracy, and I don't say that lightly. Our democracy depends on voter participation, and it depends on a free and unencumbered news media. And that means a news media that people can believe. And so we've got a lot of work to do. You know, we are so lucky to live in this amazing country, to live in this amazing democracy, system of government that we have, and to have the free press that we have in this country. So much of the rest of the world, most of the rest of the world doesn't have anything like this. So we are so blessed and so fortunate. But we have to work at it, and we have to make sure that it's working well for all Americans. So, you know, we have real conversations to have after this election.
Veteran journalist Judy Woodruff, co-anchor and managing editor of the PBS NewsHour. Next month, she will be honored at the Atlanta Press Club as a new member of the Hall of Fame. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
That's our show for today. But as always, we want you to weigh in. What do you think about objectivity in journalism? Can we expect journalists to be neutral? And how do you think the media has handled the candidates this election season? Call us at 404-500-9457. Leave us a message with your opinion. You can also tweet us, of course. I'm at Celeste Headlee. The show is at OST Talk, or post to Facebook. For today, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. Have a great day.